The very same Talmud that describes Yochanan ben Zakkai's fleeing Jerusalem also informs us that he obligated the Jewish people to commemorate temple rituals in the hope that Mehera Yibana Beit HaMikdash, that the temple in Jerusalem would soon be rebuilt. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 101, Yochanan ben Zakkai's response. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Last Hanukkah, as part of the countrywide celebration, the Israel Antiquities Authority opened to the public remains of a Jewish town excavated from the earth, Yavne, where the Sanhedrin took up residence in 70 CE. As we've discussed, Talmudic tradition accords the credit for the Sanhedrin's survival to the sage Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who fled Jerusalem before it fell and received permission from Vespasian to establish an academy in Yavne. Now, as I described in an article and commentary, an entire home has been excavated and uncovered in Yavne, one which clearly belonged to Jews who kept kosher and the Levitical laws of ritual purity, and may perhaps have been the domicile of a Sanhedrin member. Nearby, a cemetery may bear the bodies of some of the most important rabbis in Jewish history. All of Jewish ritual from the destruction of the temple to today is defined by what Ben Zakkai and his Sanhedrin retained, taught, and transmitted in Yavne, making this nondescript site the most influential place after Jerusalem in the history of Jewish law. Yavne's significance is now being celebrated and highlighted by Israeli archaeologists. The excavators inform the media that the town represents, quote, a direct voice from the past, from the period when the Jewish leadership salvaged the remaining fragments from the fall of the temple, went into exile in Yavne, and set about reestablishing the Jewish people there, end quote. They are correct, and it's therefore worth noting that the Israel Antiquities Authority also staged an exhibit in northern Israel that highlighted how the Sanhedrin preserved Judaism and the memory of Jerusalem. Today, one can visit what is called the Sanhedrin Trail, the different cities to which the Sanhedrin journeyed after Yavne. And rightly understood, as I further argued in my article and commentary, these excavations and exhibitions are nothing less than the righting of a historic wrong, a recognition of all that modern Zionism owes Yavne, as well as what it owes the Sanhedrin and the man who oversaw its survival. We have seen how, according to Josephus, there seem to have been leaders of what would later be called Rabbinic Judaism involved in the revolt. For Josephus lists Shimon ben Gamliel, the great-grandson of Hillel, as one who participated in the appointing of generals for the battle. But we've also seen how another rabbinic sage, Yochanan ben Zakkai, seeing a Jerusalem where Jew was slaughtering Jew, sensed that the city would fall, not only because of the brutality of the Roman assault, but because a Jerusalem that had eschewed Jewish unity did not have the right to expect salvation. Ben Zakkai therefore escaped Jerusalem and received Roman permission to establish an academy at Yavne. In Yavne, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai reconstituted the Sanhedrin, set about preserving Jewish tradition, but also ensured that Jews would continue to long to return to Jerusalem once again. We must study how he did all this. The theologian Michael Wishegrad has noted that following the destruction of the temple, one might have expected Jews to do one of two things, either to continue the sacrificial rituals of Jerusalem elsewhere, or to say that these rituals were no longer essential. Jews, however, embraced neither of these options. In contrast, the rabbis of Yavne insisted that Judaism had been dealt a terrible blow, that without the temple, many of its celebrations were a shadow of their former self, that the temple rituals could only be marked in Jerusalem, and that the temple had to be remembered because one day it would return. People often incorrectly remark that for the rabbis of Yavne, other rituals replaced the sacrifices, but that is incorrect. Rather, certain rituals were given laws that remind us of the temple rituals, ensuring thereby that the temple is not forgotten and that we continue to pray for its restoration, as well as for the restoration of its rituals. Thus, the rabbis of Yavne ordained that Jewish prayer three times a day should precisely parallel the times of the temple sacrifices, and that the prayers themselves would contain requests for the temple's restoration. Michael Wishegrad put it this way, quote, "We need only remember that the system of prayer that was instituted after the destruction of the temple had a very close relationship to the order of sacrifices. Various portions of the prayer service correspond very consciously to the sacrifices in the temple, so that, for example, on the Sabbath, when an additional Musaf sacrifice was brought in the temple, the prayer service had an additional portion, Musaf, corresponding to the additional sacrifice offered on the Sabbath in the temple. Lack of respect for the sacrifices could therefore not have been the reason that Judaism felt no necessity for retaining them in sacramental form. And Wishegard adds, the true reason is Judaism's ability to face up to defeat. And Wishegard further explains, Israel knows how to accept failure without plunging either into nihilism or the fantasy of success, end quote. What Wishegard means is that Rabbinic Judaism did not proclaim, never proclaimed, that Judaism was better off without the temple. On the contrary, the rabbis insisted that without the temple, many of Judaism's rituals were shells of their former selves. But the rabbis also insisted that the temple could not be replaced, that only the temple in Jerusalem atop Mount Moriah could be the locus of Jewish devotion. The only way forward for the rabbis of Yavne was not to replace Jerusalem, but to remember it, to remind Jews that Judea had been defeated, that our own infighting and sins had helped bring that destruction about, but also that Jews must continue to believe that one day return and redemption would occur, and that this full vision of redemption would include the temple as well. Wishegrad adds, quote, the temple in Jerusalem, in short, was the center of Judaism, and now it had been destroyed. The place of the Holy of Holies was being trodden by pagan feet, and the Temple Mount had become a rubbish heap. In the light of this, there were two possibilities. The nation's will to live could have expired, or it could have denied the magnitude of the catastrophe by the sacramental substitution mentioned. Judaism chose neither. It did not lose its will to live, nor did it deny what happened to it. That it did not lose its will to live is clear enough. Had it done so, there would be no Jews and no Judaism today. But it also did not deny the truth of what had happened. End quote. This means that precisely in the counterintuitive choice made by Ben Zakkai and Yavne, Judaism's connection to Jerusalem remained. By refusing to replace the temple, by insisting that prayer should be oriented toward the schedules and cycles of the temple, but also by insisting that only when the temple was restored would Judaism itself be fully restored. Yochanan ben Zakkai and Yavne thereby allowed Judaism to continue without Jews being in Jerusalem, but also ensured that Jews would never forget and would ultimately return to Jerusalem. Yochanan ben Zakkai also insisted that certain rituals should keep the temple fresh in our mind. For example, originally the lulav, the palm frond, was waved outside the temple only on the first day of the holiday of Sukkot, while in the temple it was held for all 7 days of the holiday. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decreed that today we should wave the lulav all 7 days in order to remember the temple. Thus, every Sukkot, for every day except Shabbat, we parade with the palm frond, just as they did in the temple, but at the same time, Rabbinic Judaism prohibits us from seeking to recreate or replace the temple. We remember what we had, but we mourn for and long for what we lost. All this kept Judaism alive, ensuring that wherever Jews pray, they pray 3 times a day for the restoration of Jerusalem and for the temple in Jerusalem, ensuring also that Jews celebrated the Seder everywhere on earth, but ended that Seder with the words next year in Jerusalem. Much of this is missed, and thus there is, sadly, a long tradition of Yavne misinterpretation. The story of Yochanan ben Zakkai has been misused for years by those who seek to attack the modern Jewish state. There are those who speak about Yochanan ben Zakkai as if he was uninterested in Jewish restoration. But this is preposterous. The very same Talmud that describes Yochanan ben Zakkai's fleeing Jerusalem also informs us that he obligated the Jewish people to commemorate temple rituals in the hope that Mehera Yibana Beit HaMikdash, that the temple in Jerusalem would soon be rebuilt. The very rabbinic faith in which Yochanan ben Zakkai played so central a role celebrated the victories of Judah the Maccabee. Yochanan ben Zakkai's last words on his deathbed were a request to prepare a throne for the spirit of a famous Davidic king, Hezekiah, coming to escort him to the next world. And this, as Yaakov Herzog has put it, was meant, quote, as a tangible symbol of faith that the kingdom of Israel would surely be restored, end quote. And the truth is that even some of the heroic founders of Israel failed to celebrate Yochanan ben Zakkai, failed to understand Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once reflected with pain on the fact that Israel's founders gave ben Zakkai no credit for the achievements of modern Israel. Rabbi Soloveitchik put it this way, quote, when Chaim Weizmann opened the Israeli Knesset on Tu B'Shvat at 5709, he rejected a list of all the dreamers and fighters who, with their self-sacrifice, contributed to the miracle of the State of Israel. He began with the Katowice Conference and the Bilu Movement in the 1880s. He managed to name Theodor Herzl, Max Norway, Nachum Sokolov, Achad Ha'am, Chaim Nachman Bialik, Eliezer ben Yehuda, Menachem Ussishkin, Louis Brandeis, and Edmund de Rothschild. But he forgot to mention all the generations, from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Rabbi Mendel of Vitebsk, who fasted and bemoaned the destruction of the temple, who ignored all the persecutions, the mockery, and laughter, who continued to hope that tomorrow the temple would be rebuilt, and envisioned the great edifice that would tower over all the mountaintops, end quote. Rabbi Soloveitchik's point was that some secular Zionists sought in Jewish statehood Jewish normalization. But the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai reminds us that the Jews are a chosen people with a sacred role to play, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai reminded the Jewish people that the Torah is at the center of this sacred role, and also that this Torah is best and most fully observed in a restored Jerusalem. Only when we combine the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai with the lessons of modern Zionism can a full appreciation of modern Jewish statehood be deduced. As I noted in my Tikva lectures on Pirkei Avot, it is easy to overlook Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's most astonishing act, because aside from asking for Yavne, Yochanan ben Zakkai, according to the Talmud, also requested from Rome that the dynasty of Hillel be preserved, so that the leader of the Sanhedrin would continue to come from the house of David. This means that Yochanan ben Zakkai gave no thought to founding a new dynasty of his own. Great men of history are usually remembered for what they achieved, yet often their greatest moments are best understood by what they chose not to do. For example, Washington's most important legacy for all that he did do may have been his decision not to seize power, his decision to resign his commission once victory over the British had been secured. Or as George III supposedly said, if he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world. It is with this in mind that we can appreciate the extraordinary meaning of what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is recorded as saying in Avot, Im asita Torah harbe, al tachzik tova la'atzmecha, ki lekach notzarta. If you have created much Torah, do not be arrogant, because for this purpose you are created. This may have been a statement, first and foremost, for himself. All Torah imbibed from Yavne to today by Jews can be credited to Yochanan ben Zakkai. In a certain sense, he made all of it. Had anyone had the right to bestow new honor and authority upon himself and his family as the new head of the Sanhedrin, it could have been him. But no, he seems to have set up the Sanhedrin, and then, when Hillel's family arrived in Yavne, he seems to have willingly stepped off the historical scene without any hubris, thereby allowing us to be connected to the dream of Davidic restoration. And the seemingly simple maxim that he left to the Jewish people is actually one of the most eloquent testimonies to his greatness. A man to whom Judaism owes its survival and to whom modern Zionism owes a profound debt. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing.